All right, we're here now for the crop market outlook session. How many of you were here in the last session? Most of you guys look like holdovers to me. Okay, well, we got some unique attendees here for this one. One of our previous speakers, Pat Westhoff, is going to provide the crop outlook for us. Pat is the director of the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. He's also a professor in the Agricultural Economics Department at Missouri. Pat is educated at several places, the University of Iowa, University of Texas, and Iowa State. Spent 4 years as a Senate Ag Committee economist, and again now for several years now has been the director of the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute. We have been a little bit unfair to Pat today. I just want to publicly apologize to him for scheduling this conference almost immediately after the monthly WASDE report. So he's when you do market outlook, it's to do market outlook immediately before or immediately after the report is not any fun. And we've done that to Pat today, but he's been very gracious with his time, and I know he's been diligent to get in and digest the report and get things updated, but we have kind of put him on the spot. He's a real pro, though, and I'm sure it's not a problem for him, but we really do appreciate him agreeing to do this, and especially agreeing to do this on those terms. Before we get started, because I know I'll forget at the end, I hope you've downloaded the convention app. Surveys for all of these conferences are on that app. Some of you've probably been to a lot of our meetings and remember the old paper days when we would hand you evaluations for every conference. We're not doing that anymore, but we do have those surveys on the app, and we'd love to get your feedback on these presentations. So please help us out with that. With that, I will step aside and let Pat come give us an outlook. Please join me in welcoming Pat Westhoff.
Thanks a lot, John, and thanks to everybody for sticking around, especially those of you who had to sit through me just an hour ago. Hopefully this will come up. There we go, the crop market outlook. So as John said, yes, I did try to put in the WASDE as fast as I could this morning. We'll cover some of those changes. Thank goodness the changes weren't so big that they changed my stories too much. I often have to rely on people forgetting things quickly, and I went into too much today. Before we launch into the crop outlook itself, I want to say a few words about the macroeconomy, because it is so important for our prospects, especially international markets for agricultural products. Then I'll talk about the crop market outlook itself. And then as time permits at the end, I'll say a few minutes about how these price projections will interact with farm bill choices that we just heard about in the last session. So first of all, the big picture about the overall global economy. We take our macroeconomic forecast from a group called IHS Global Insight. They've been doing this about as long as we've been doing. Our market projections, they make as many mistakes as we do. And we'll talk about a couple of those this morning. But just so you know where they're standing right now, they're looking at a little bit of an uptick in the U.S. economy, a little bit of an uptick in the world economy in 2015. So about a 2.7% growth rate in this country, about 3% for the world as a whole. That'd be the highest we've had since 2011 in the case of the U.S., and highest in the world since about the immediate post-recession recovery as well. As you go forward in subsequent years, we're looking at maybe U.S. growth a little higher than it's been the last 3 or 4 years, but still not the kind of robust growth you might prefer, all else equal. What's important probably just as much what's happening in the U.S. economy is happening in lots of our major trading partners. China, of course, has been a huge source of demand growth in recent years. And the good news is that China keeps growing. The bad news is not quite as fast as it's been growing. So we're looking at about 6.5% growth in China this year. That's, again, incredibly fast growth by our standards, but not what China's been accustomed to the last number of years. Now, as we go beyond 2015, Global Insight does forecast a bit of a recovery again at growth rate in China thereafter. Mexican economy has picked up a little bit, and looking at 3.5-4% growth the next several years. European economy, of course, has some fragilities right now, especially with the uncertainties in Greece and lots of other concerns across the continent as well. But Global Insight was talking about 1 or 2% growth for the European Union economy the next several years as well. Inflation, interest rates. Good news, unemployment rates have come down probably faster than most of us had anticipated. And we're looking at some future recovery there as well, with unemployment rates dropping a bit further down to what we historically have considered to be more or less full employment, 5% unemployment. Now, that masks some other problems in the labor market, where we do have less people employed as a share of the economy than we had before the recession. There's fewer people participating in the labor force than was the case before the recession. We're going to find out in the next couple, 3 years, probably how many of those folks try to come back into the labor force as conditions improve, and how many are just playing out from this point forward. That'll be an interesting one to watch. Good news, I guess, is because of lower oil prices, you know, we're looking at almost no inflation this year for the economy as a whole. You know, Global Insight's projection is essentially 0% inflation for 2015, and only a couple percent for subsequent years. And then finally, of course, interest rates is a very important one for the farm economy. After many years in a row of almost near zero interest rates from the Fed, we are looking at the probability of an uptick in rates either later this year or in 2016. The exact timing will depend on how strong the economy is and other things we can't know possibly at this time. The Global Insight does have those rates popping up more than some other folks do. And so if we went from near zero rates like we have now for the Fed funds rate to almost 4% in 2018, that'd be a big deal. You know, that's not what we've probably anticipated, and lots of land purchase decisions, lots of other decisions have been made on the assumption that those interest rates might be a bit different than this. So that's going to be one to watch, of course, as well. Exchange rates hugely important, especially we've seen in the last few weeks. Against the dollar, I mean, the euro, I should say, in the left-hand chart, against the Japanese yen in the right-hand chart, you know, we've already seen a big increase in the value of the dollar the last few weeks. And Global Insight expects that to persist through 2015, in fact, even to get a bit stronger in the case of the yen in 2016. In the case of the euro, the assumption is that this may be a short-term phenomenon and will come back down again once we get past this, the concerns about the Greek economy and things like that. China is a little bit different story. China, we've seen a major appreciation of the Chinese currency, a depreciation of the dollar in recent years. And while there has been a slight increase in the value of the yuan this year, it's not nearly as large as we've seen in some of the currencies. Now, the bad news is that means we're not getting as much of a kick from continued devaluation of the dollar versus the Chinese currency we've had the last several years. The good news is it's not, you know, not as bad of an uptick in the value of the dollar against that major currency than it is against some others. In Brazil, a major competitor, of course, we saw the dollar go opposite directions the last several years. You know, between 2006, let's say 2005, and the floor there a few years ago, you know, we saw a big change one direction that helped our competitiveness out. But now the last couple, 3 years, the real, the Brazilian currency, has gotten weaker against the dollar. That's actually a benefit to South American producers, makes them more competitive with us. Now, the big one, of course, that I haven't talked about too much yet so far that's critically important going forward is the oil price. And the left-hand chart gives you two different views about the future and oil prices, and I'm sure they're both going to be wrong. That's something I know with any certainty. The top line is going to be Global Insight's projections that they just came out with, and I'll tell you it's very different, their projections, from just back in October. You know, back in October, they were saying $80, $90 for this year. Well, that's obviously not where we're at today, and we dropped below $50 briefly there last few days. They're projecting around 60 or so for the year as a whole, and then increasing a bit over the next several years, getting back to the kind of levels we saw a couple years ago by the time you get to 2018, 2019. So that's one view of the future. Their argument is that we have enough demand global for oil around the world that even though we're in an oversupply situation right now, demand's going to grow fast enough to absorb that oil. Because of low prices now, we're not going to invest as much in drilling, et cetera, the next couple years as we might have otherwise, and that combination causes prices to recover. Futures market is still a different story right now. The bottom line, the blue line, is giving you the June futures price for the next several years. And yes, it does increase a little bit from current levels, but not that much. These are very different views of the future. It gets even more extreme if I go beyond 2019. And it makes a big difference for ag. How much is it going to cost to produce your crops, and what's the prospects for biofuels in the future? The good news thing from an ag perspective is that natural gas prices are expected to remain relatively tame by recent standards. And that should help cut costs of production for a variety of things, and hopefully longer term cut nitrogen fertilizer prices as well, even though we haven't seen it much yet. So let's talk about the corn market first. Here's futures prices for March corn futures going back to 2013. Just a reminder, that thing that we all know, but just remember how much the change has been. We had $7 corn as recently as the spring of 2013 for the 2015 March futures contracts. And then we dropped as low as $3.50 at harvest time, and we're back around $4 today. Now, one thing I get criticized a lot is, you know, someone who's been doing this for a long time is, you know, we always miss the mark and we never get the right price projection. So I said, well, one way to fix that, I'll do 500 different possibilities. One is bound to be right. So every spring now, we're doing 500 solutions for the future, not just this year, but, you know, all 10 years out that we do our baselines for. We're going to draw from a lot of different yields, different demand conditions here and around the world, and lots of other factors as well. And what this chart's going to show you is the numbers we did last March, you know, doing our baseline. We're about to start the new version of this next week, what we said back last March. So if we'd had another 2012-type situation, we would have very low yields across the bottom there in the country for 2014. And we could have been talking about a $7 corn price. We could have had a price around the level of 2012 again if we'd had the kind of yield we had in 2012. But if, on the other hand, we'd had exactly wonderful, most perfect conditions ever around the entire country, we could have been talking about 180 bushel corn. And that could have meant as low as, you know, a price starting with a 2 for a corn price for this year. Those were all possibilities as recently as last March. The average of those, what we published in our Outlook publication, was an average price of 417 a bushel and a yield of 163.5. So that's a number you might have seen in our publication as, you know, Stafford's projection for the future. So where have we actually ended up? Based on this morning's report, the average yield is now estimated 171 bushels an acre. That's down a couple bushels from last month's estimate, but still way above a year ago and the record by far for U.S. corn yield. And an average price is now is 365 a bushel, says USDA. They have a range of 335 to 395. It's the midpoint of those 365. If you had told me last March we'd have the kind of yield we had, I would have told you a price of about 365. Now, this is not really a surprise, frankly, given how big the crop was. It's not that demand is bad. It's not that things are going bad in the overall ag economy. It's that we had a big crop, and that drove down the price. So here's the WASDE from this morning. If I didn't make a mistake typing in numbers, and I may have, because I did this in a hurry before I stood up here this morning, they reduced the planted acreage number, I believe, just a smidgen, as I recall. Harvested didn't change very much at all. 171 bushel yield. So therefore, the production number for this year is 14.2. It's a couple hundred million bushels less than estimated last month. They reduced the feed and residual by 100 million bushels from last month's estimate. It's still up from last year. It's still a very big number relative to the animal numbers we have out there, et cetera. It only makes sense because when we have a large crop, we tend to have a large residual. It's not that we're necessarily feeding more. It's that there's statistical errors, et cetera, that USDA makes that tend to go a certain direction. A bigger crop means a larger residual. So current estimate there, 52.75. Ethanol, a little bit of an uptick from last month, but still only slightly above a year ago levels on ethanol. We'll talk about that more in a second. Other domestic use is not very exciting. Export number, to some people, surprised, they did not revise upward the export figure yet this month. It was still 1750, same as last month's estimate. And the carryout, yes, is less than last month's estimate, but it's still 1.9 billion bushels, which is still a lot of corn. So there's still downward pressure on corn prices in spite of a little bit more rosy situation than had been estimated back in December. Let's talk about some of the major demand components here real quick. First, ethanol. This is one of our big puzzles. We're going to be doing our new baseline next week, and I don't know what we're going to do for sure on ethanol going forward. We don't know the policy. You know, the RFS is not clear at all, to put it mildly, for even 2014, let alone 2015 and beyond. So we're going to have to make some guesstimate of what USDA or the EPAs are actually going to do there in terms of the RFS. But just as importantly, we have to make some assumptions and some projections of what might happen to U.S. export prospects for ethanol. You can kind of see that in this chart. The blue line there, the light blue line, is actually giving you how much ethanol we could use in this country if every single gallon was a 10% blend. So if the only thing sold in this country was 10% blends, nothing more, nothing less, that'd be the blue line. We consume roughly 130 billion gallons of gasoline in this country. That'd be 13 billion gallons worth of ethanol. Translate that back to corn, it's about 5 billion bushels, give or take, of corn that you could use in ethanol production just to satisfy 10% blend markets in this country. Yet for a couple of recent years, especially this past year, we've actually used more ethanol than that. How can we do that? It's not that we have huge amounts of E85. We have very small amounts of E85. E15 is almost non-existent so far. It's all been because of exports. We're exporting a fair amount of ethanol these days. Until oil prices collapsed, ethanol was one of the cheapest sources of BTUs in the world. And so we were doing very well in export markets, thank you very much. So going forward, the question is, with lower oil prices, lower than we have assumed when we did these projections, mind you, can we sustain the kind of level of exports that we've had recently, or are they going to fall back? And if we don't have a more positive picture than we know about today on the RFS, could that also be a negative? So I could easily tell you a story where our projections could get more negative than I'm showing you here for corn ethanol in front of us. I don't think we drop below the blue line. I think we end up using 10% blends almost no matter what. But how much more can we use than we can use in a 10% blend is the real question mark. I won't spend a lot of time on the livestock slide. I think those of you who went to the livestock session yesterday heard a very good presentation there. Just hit a couple of high points real quick. First of all, in the case of beef, you know, there's not enough animals out there for there to be an increase in beef production this year. At least not a very big one. And we project a slight decline, our colleagues at University of Missouri. Maybe in 2016 that finally turns around. Maybe. It's not a sure thing even today on that one. So beef supplies remain relatively constrained. If you drop down the line there for steer prices, you see we're talking about an average steer price for 2015. That's about the same as the average for 2014. And a feeder cattle price likewise is very strong, maybe even stronger than last year's level given cheaper corn. Then as you go forward on pork, chicken, and milk, on the other hand, a very different story. For 2015, large increases in production across the board for chicken, and for milk. And those tend to put downward pressure on prices for those products, as you can see here. 2016, further increases in supplies. So we're going to have more animals out there. There should be a bit more feed demand, per se, looking forward. But as I said, you have to take into account the fact that you've got this residual component of the feed and residual that tends to move with production. If we have a smaller crop next year, that residual portion probably goes down as well. Now, this may be a little hard to see. The slide is showing you our projection we did back in December, way back, 4 weeks ago, which are now out of date given the current estimates of this year's crop. But I want to highlight a couple of things about the story here, not just for 2015, but for beyond. Again, we do think it's likely we'll have reduced acreage for corn in 2015. We've had these numbers reviewed, and I think there are very few people who talk about even flat corn acreage in 2015. Most people expect at least some decline in corn acreage in 2015. How much of a decline, people can argue about. Who knows what a trend yield is for corn these days? We have typed in here about 165. It could be a bit more, it could be a bit less. But we're talking about if you get that kind of a yield number and those kind of acres harvested, we'd be looking at a significantly smaller corn crop in 2015 than we had this past year. So you might think, well, that should cause a big price recovery, right? Well, maybe. As I said, we don't expect much exciting to happen in the way of ethanol use in 2015. Feed use, even though we have a little more animal numbers out there perhaps next year than we had this in 2014-15 crop year, probably not a big increase in feed, just that perhaps an actual decline given this residual component I talked about. Exports, there's lots of competition out there, not just for corn, but for wheat and other grains as well. So while we are projecting a bit of an increase in exports of 2015, it's not a very big one. So that combination of things only results in a relatively modest drawdown of stocks. Now, mind you, if the 2014 stocks aren't quite as big as I'm showing you here, maybe it gives a bit lower stocks, a bit higher price than I've gotten these December numbers. But in December, we were projecting a season average price for 2015 of about $3.80 a bushel. Again, I'd say maybe a bit more than that today, but we're not talking about $5 as being a reasonable expectation. Four maybe, but something less than we've gotten used to the last several years, even a bit off of the harvest time lows from 2014. As you see, going forward, our projections in December, at least, were that we'd stay around that $4 range for many years to come, given the fundamentals as we saw them at that time. So what's that mean for costs and returns? So the top line here on the left-hand chart is going to give you the value of the corn crop on a dollar per acre basis, just market returns only, just price times yield. The blue line is going to give you the variable cost of production. That's fuel, fertilizer, seed, and the like does not include rental costs and also does not include machinery purchase costs. So it's just your out-of-pocket if you already own your land or already own your machinery. So you see that margin shrunk a lot, the right-hand chart there, from a national average of nearly $600 an acre in 2012 to something less than $300 an acre in 2014-15. Again, numbers will be different across the country. Missouri will be very different than Iowa. But again, almost anywhere in the country, a sharp drop in net returns in a relatively short period of time. We are looking at a little bit of recovery going forward, but not a dramatic recovery. We do not get back to the kind of levels we had in 2011, 2012 anytime soon, short of a big surprise on the demand side or a very short crop someplace. Soybeans, same type of chart I showed you for futures prices last couple of years. Reminder again, as recent as last spring, we had $15 soybeans in the March contracts. Dropped as low as about $9. We're about $10.50 until this morning's reports came out. And I understand we're down early this morning on soybeans because of the reports. But around the $10 range today. Supply and use, again, if I've transcribed the WASDE numbers from this morning correctly, they revised the acreage number a little bit down, not dramatically, but 83.7 planted, 83.1 harvested, not as much on the harvested as it might have been thought. Yields actually up a bit from last month's estimates, 47.8, a record by far on soybean yields. So it actually gives about the same production as estimated last month. In fact, about 10 million bushels more than had been estimated back in December, 3.97 billion bushels of soybeans. So even if crush is up almost 50 million bushels, even if exports are up by 123 million bushels this year, we'd still be looking at 410 million bushels of carryout. That's a lot of carryout for soybeans, folks. And it's not just here. South American crop got bigger in this month's report. The Brazilian crop grew another million or so tons. And so that combination means we could have very high levels of global carryout of soybeans next spring and summer. I, frankly, have been surprised that soybean prices have hung in there as well as they have, given the likelihood of very, very large supplies coming in front of us. Yes, the Chinese keep growing demand. Don't get me wrong. They do, and that's a very important part of the market. But it doesn't appear to me, at least, that we're likely to be able to keep that demand up with the pace of supply growth that we've already seen in 2014 and the crop being harvested in South America right now. The USA did increase their price range a little bit, and they narrowed it as well. So the midpoint's now $10.20 a bushel, up from $10 last month. So there's our, again, the five-year numbers we did back in December. A little different starting point if we were to do it fresh today, but not dramatically so, because we haven't changed this year's crop size all that terribly much. And note again our 2015 numbers here. Most people tend to think we're likely to have an increase in planting of soybeans in 2015. Some folks are showing a much larger increase than I'm showing you here. These are harvested acre numbers here, you know, a slight uptick in harvested acres in 2015. Even if yields drop back to 44.5 bushels an acre, which would be more than 3 bushels off of this year's record, 2014 record, we'd still be talking about, you know, 3.7 or so billion bushels of soybean crop next year. Okay, add that to the 400 roughly bushels of million bushels of carry-in, that's a lot of supply. And we're talking about global supplies being actually bigger than in 2014 under that scenario, even with a lower yield projected for 2015 under average weather conditions. Crush, yeah, I got a big increase in crush built in. There's enough demand for meal and oil around the world that we should see more crush here and elsewhere as well. Exports, on the other hand, I'm not quite as optimistic about for 2015. Why? Because there's a lot of South American crop that's got to go somewhere. You know, we've got the market right now because we're only game in town until that South American crop really hits global markets. But once it does, there's a lot of it. So we're going to have a tough time even holding our own in yields in exports in 2015, I think. But we'll see how our markets evolve, of course. If that is actually what happens, we're talking about ending stocks in 2015 being about as large, if not larger, than they were this year, or expected to be this year. So continued downward pressure on prices. Now, again, I don't think if I do it again today, I'm going to be quite as low as I show you here. But a sub-$9 price is what we're talking about for 2015 crop. And USDA is in the same price range I'll show you in a few minutes for their projection for 2015. That's lower than current futures by a fair amount. Be very upfront about that. But I think the prospects, the possibility of a downturn in soybeans is very, very real at this point if things evolve as they appear to be evolving. Once things even out a bit, we get back to the $10 range eventually on soybean prices longer term. There's our cost and returns figures for soybeans, the same type of surge for corn. Comparing the two again, this is national average, which doesn't mean squat for anybody in the country because there's no place in the country that has average prices and yields for both these crops. I understand that. But just taking a national average of these returns, typically we find that corn returns are a bit higher than soybean returns. That's because you've got a little more at risk and also because you tend to have corn grown a bit better average quality land than soybeans. So an apples-to-apples comparison would show these numbers closer together. Main point I want to show you here is that for both 2013 and perhaps for 2014, we may well have soybean national average net returns per acre higher than corn. That doesn't happen very often. And it's part of the reason why we planted a bunch of beans this past year, why we may well plant a bunch of beans again in 2015. But once we do that, we get back into a more normal relationship going forward. If I redo these numbers based on comments I've received, we'll probably bring the red line and blue line a bit closer together. How we get there, though, depends on whether we do that by increasing bean prices a little bit or by reducing corn prices a little bit, because it matters, obviously, which of those we do. So crop acreage. We already talked about corn and beans. Just see the rest of the picture right now. I haven't looked at the winter wheat acreage report very carefully. I understand that it showed a bit of a drop in winter wheat acreage for 2015. So that would probably suggest we need to bring down our 57 million acres projected here for all wheat for 2015, a little bit at least. You see the other numbers there, a little bit less cotton expected in 2015. We'll talk about that in a second. Rice, we'll see where we end up, maybe a little bit of a drop in rice as well, perhaps. You see barley, oats, sunflowers, other minor crops crops not grown as many acres, I should say, relatively flat year over year. Add them all up, we have 261.8 million acres of 13 crops we keep track of. That's less than last year, and if we have perfect growing conditions or planting conditions again this spring, it's going to be too low. But we have very good planting conditions in most of the country in 2014. Just between the average conditions in 2015 will bring it down a bit, and prices have to matter a bit as well. So a lower price, we think that tends to pull down our total acreage number at least a little bit from last year's a very high level. Note that we just get down the level we had in 2013, again, for planted acreage for the major crops combined. CRP will probably be down a little bit year over year. We'll see where hay acreage turns out. Some of all crops, again, about 340 million acres, including the CRP and the hay acreage. So let's talk about wheat just for a second here. Again, in our current year, we've had wheat prices relatively high compared to corn. That can't persist forever. We've got a lot of wheat around the world. We have U.S. having a hard time selling its wheat right now because prices are higher than for many of our competitors. Lots of corn out there as well. Lots of reasons why wheat prices may well fall into the new crop. So we're actually projecting a 505 wheat price for the crop harvest in 2015. Again, maybe a bit higher based on today's report, but not a dramatic change, given what I've seen so far today. So again, in a more normal relationship relative to corn for wheat. Here's our wheat costs and returns. Again, the same type of picture we saw for corn and soybeans, but now we've got wheat returns back to levels they were back in 2010. Cotton briefly. This is all cotton, not just upland, so the total cotton. You're expecting a drop in harvested acreage and planted acreage in 2015. Who knows where yields will end up. The yield shown here for 2014 has now been revised upwards a bit. So 2014 crop grew a bit in the wild seed this morning, but didn't change things overall very much. The overall picture is pretty much the same as it was previously estimated to be. If we pretty much need to be able to harvest a bit less and not grow as much cotton in 2015, because we don't need the cotton we got. Prices have fallen to a lot from the levels we've been used to the last several years. That 60-cent range appears to be the kind of the norm going forward. And just one straight quick picture for why that's happening is the global supply and demand picture. You know, forget about individual countries. Think about the big global picture. The red line is going to be overall global production of cotton. The light blue line there is going to be global consumption of cotton. And that bottom line is going to be the ending stocks of cotton. We've now had four straight years where cotton production has not just exceeded use, it's exceeded by a fair amount. And for the math to work, that means the stocks must have increased, and boy, did they increase. This is primarily China. This is, in fact, almost exclusively China because of policy choices the Chinese have made in the past that caused them to build stocks. They have now changed their policy going forward, so they're not at all likely to accumulate stocks going forward. The $64 question is what they will do with the stocks they have on hand. They have they have more than a year's worth of cotton use in storage today. So, you know, either they harvested no cotton at all in 2015 and didn't import any cotton in 2015 and just wanted to rely on their own domestic stocks, there physically would be enough cotton to do that. It wouldn't be the right quality, don't get me wrong. They have other reasons to import and to produce. And what's going to happen with that stuff in storage is a big question mark. As you can see, we're projecting it stays high because we don't know what to do with it. You know, unless demand grows a lot faster than we think it's likely to, or unless supply...